A few years ago, Caroline Randall Williams decided to write a book with her mother. Now, Caroline is a poet, and her mother, Alice Randall, is a best-selling novelist. But this joint project was a cookbook based on family recipes. It's called Soul Food Love, and it starts with these words. Here's Caroline.
This cookbook tells the story of five kitchens. It's the story of 100 years of cooking and eating in one Black American family. On these pages, we share the kitchen memories, kitchen gossip, and food ways that sustained two great-grandmothers, a grandmother, and us, a mother and a daughter.
So who wrote that?
There are moments where Mom and I wrote specific chunks alone, but really it was this amazing, okay, so you start with this chapter and you write some of what you got and then we'll swap and edit. So it's kind of hard to know whose words are whose. It's a really organically collaborative entity.
That sounds so like seamless, but I know for a fact that mother-daughter relationships are not always seamless.
Well, you know, that is true. And you'd be amazed how many people are going, how could you do it? But I call my mom every day, at least once a day, since I went to boarding school when I was 15. It wasn't seamless, but it was utterly natural for us.
I should note, we were having this conversation in front of a live audience, and sitting in that audience, proudly looking on, was Alice Randall. Have there ever been times when you don't see eye to eye? And how do you kind of hash out differences in that case?
She's here, guys.
Just pretend she's not in the audience.
Of course there have been. But, you know, it's been a really good exercise in like emotional self-discipline for me, because you have to respect the people that come before you. Being an apprentice to somebody who only wants good things for you mm-hmm. and is going to do everything they can to make sure that you are the best at the profession that you are following in the footsteps, that's a luxury. But we definitely have had our moments.
From Nashville Public Radio, this is Movers and Thinkers, where we get to meet some of the most interesting people in the city. I'm your host, Emily Siner. And today I'm talking to three people who have taken on the family business. Caroline Randall Williams comes from a family of writers. She's published a book of poetry called Lucy Negro Redux, and her mother Alice is perhaps best known for the Gone with the Wind parody called The Wind Done Gone. Manuel Delgado is a third-generation luthier, which means he makes instruments by hand. He specializes in building guitars. As an adult, he left the original family business based in Los Angeles, moved to Nashville, and opened Delgado Guitars.
More than anything, it's just I'm closest to my father and my grandfather when I'm in the shop. I can feel them, I hear them.
And Amy Mears is the pastor of a progressive Baptist church in Nashville. She grew up in South Carolina in the 70s and ended up going into the same line of work as her father, a Southern Baptist preacher, at a time when not many women were taking that path.
I didn't do either of the acceptable things. And doing a different thing feels like betrayal of the established accepted patterns.
We'll talk about the decision to follow in a parent's footsteps and the complicated family dynamics that come with it. Stick with us.
This episode of Movers and Thinkers is sponsored by Nashville Software School, a nonprofit boot camp where students can launch careers as software developers in less than a year. Visit NashvilleSoftwareSchool.com to learn more. And by the Jennings A. Jones College of Business at Middle Tennessee State University. Working professionals can get an MBA in 12 months, in person or online, with specialties in music business and healthcare management. Visit mtsu.edu/business.
I know that the phrase family business could be quite broad. It could be an abstract concept, like just doing similar kind of work. But for Manuel, it is very tangible. So tangible that he can bring it into the studio to show it off. One of his guitars. Show us what makes it unique to your family, maybe something that's specific to the craft of the Delgados.
Well, the instrument that I'm holding now is, I mean, everything we do is handcrafted. So most people are used to seeing instruments now that are done with CNC machines or lasers or a mass-produced method or what they call the McDonald's business model, where you're finding low-skilled labor to duplicate a process over and over. So this bridge right here, Indian rosewood, is all done by hand, chiseled. This inlay on the fingerboard, all done by hand. Even the necks are sanded and carved out by hand. So, and this is a... So this is a nylon string classical instrument, and we can actually tailor make the sound for the client.
So how was guitar making talked about in your family growing up?
Well, it was, I mean, it's just part of who we were. We were a very musical family. My father was an amazing singer and guitar player, and he learned from my grandfather and my great uncle, who also performed in mariachi groups and groups called sones. So music was always a part of our family. And then just as kids, we grew up in the shop. So much like my two daughters who are here with me now, and Ava started helping me in the shop when she was about six. She's nine now. So she's already following the same path as me. I started in the shop when I was seven and built my first guitar when I was 12 to beat my father's record. He was 14. So the only thing my dad beat me, he was baptized in a guitar shop, which I thought was cool. So
how did he feel about you beating his record?
Oh, he encouraged it. And actually this summer or this fall, Ava and I are, she's going to build her first instrument. Girls are smarter than boys, so she'll trash my record by 2 years.
But it's not like Manuel always knew this is what he was going to do when he grew up. For a while, he was on a completely different path.
One of the things that my father got us involved in when I was in fifth grade is my dad used to train the LAPD boxing team. So we grew up boxing as well. And I grew up in East Los Angeles. And actually, had, then from being around so many police officers, sparring with them and different things, I was going to go into the police department and actually was going through the process in the academy and so forth. But when my dad got sick is when I decided to go back to the shop.
His dad died of cancer when Manuel was just 25, and he wanted to take on his father's legacy.
It's just, you know, the guitars don't shoot back at you. And but, on you know, for more than anything, it's just I'm closest to my father and my grandfather when I'm in the shop. So I can feel them. I hear them. Not, you know, literally, but when I'm working on something, I can hear them saying, oh, that wouldn't go that way. The wood grain goes the other way. Or little, you know, when I turn on the bandsaw, I remember my dad saying that bandsaw doesn't care if it's cutting wood or meat. So all those life lessons that my dad taught me that weren't just teaching me how to build instruments, but teaching me life lessons.
For Amy, becoming a pastor was also a somewhat circuitous path, because watching her father do his job did not lend itself to fuzzy feelings all the time.
I believe that it's accurate to say in our home, the church and the pastorate was a love-hate guilt kind of a relationship. You know, my father was a great pastor, and we loved him and his work, and we hated it because committee meetings were at night, so there weren't many, you know, evenings that our family was together. And but then there was guilt because you're really not supposed to hate the church. No, you're going to hate a gas station if that's the family business, but hating the church is another level of what you shouldn't do that we kind of had to figure out how to deal with.
So why did you want to go into it?
Well, I didn't exactly. It sort of snuck up on me. Well, okay. Here's the real answer to the question. Freshman math, that's what made me want to go into it, right? Because I was going to be a doctor. But again, that freshman math thing was a real convincing message to me. And if you want to say that that's how God speaks, I could go with that. But it was really clear I was not going to be a doctor. So then there was a whole exploration that I never intended to have. And the things that I knew how to do were the things that we had lived in our home. And I ended up in seminary, and here I am.
And Caroline, you have this legacy of writing in your family. Is that something you always knew you wanted to do, like kind of become a professional writer?
Maybe. I've always known that I had a creative instinct, and you know, I watched my mom, you know, she's had, you know, she wrote country music, she published screenplays, she's published novels. I've sort of thought of writer as this big picture umbrella calling, and I used to want to be an actress, and I thought maybe law school. I was, you know, I knew that I wanted to tell stories, whether it was acting or helping people with their legal problems or writing them.
The thing that tipped Caroline toward writing was actually teaching. She ended up doing Teach for America after college in rural Mississippi.
And I realized that I had to tell these things that I was seeing. Those things started to come clearer as I got older, that the telling stories was going to be a literal being a writer in the same way that I'd experienced that.
And so Caroline ended up following in the footsteps of her mother, just as Amy followed her father. I feel like it would make most sense for me to ask you, Amy, about your relationship with your father. But I'm actually curious about your relationship with your mom, since you did not follow in her footsteps and become a preacher's wife.
You probably wouldn't be surprised at the number of little girls growing up in South Carolina who said, I want to be a pastor. And somebody would say, oh, you mean a pastor's wife? Yeah. So that's the generation that I grew up in. And it felt very much like a betrayal of my mother's example and her life to follow the footsteps of my father. My mother was full-time, unpaid associate pastor of every church that my father ever pastored, right? It was just, her stuff was mostly behind the scenes. But from my early childhood, I remember recognizing I'm not wired like my mother is wired.
So what do you mean by betrayal?
Well, to be a Baptist woman who is a pastor, and again, I'm 55, so the generation that I came through, I think was experienced by some church women as an indictment. You know, if I can shove against the boundaries and do a different thing, interpret scripture differently, respect tradition differently, all of the stuff that goes into living into a call differently, then you might have done it too. Mm-hmm. There were two really clear options for me, and one was to follow, to do the thing that women in the church do, you know, which is all the things except for taking credit for the things, right? That's the way that I grew up. Or you could be a missionary. You could be a woman who goes to South America or Africa or the Far East and do all the things, and nobody cares because you're not threatening the system, the cultural system at home. So I didn't do either of the acceptable things. And doing a different thing feels like betrayal of the established accepted patterns.
Family tension doesn't just come from snubbing a parental expectation. It can happen even if you follow it. In Manuel's case, by the time he left the police academy and returned to the guitar business, his brother had joined it too. And after their father died, their relationship soured.
When you have two brothers, we're 2.5 years apart, but there's always a kind of a challenge and so forth. And he's the oldest son, but I took an interest in the business from the time I was very young. And, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of tension because of that. He and I got along well and did a lot outside. But in the business, I think I can't speak for him, but I feel that there was a resentment towards the relationship I had with my father. So that just made it more difficult for he and I to have success working together, if that makes sense. So yeah, that makes it really hard when you're following in your father's footsteps, and if you're feeling as though, you know, maybe your dad is favoring one son versus the other. So
Manuel decided to leave the business behind. And with that, he thought he would leave guitar making behind too.
When I left the shop in California, I couldn't foresee building instruments if it wasn't with my brother. And we weren't in the shop anymore that my father and grandfather had started, but I just always imagined it that way. And it wasn't really until I left and I managed some businesses for a few years. And it was my wife that told me, well, why don't you just start building instruments again? And I kind of was like, I never thought about that, you know?
Honoring his family legacy in a new way, on his own terms, it was daunting. And there's a lot that's daunting about getting into a family business. How do you live up to the expectations of your parents and the responsibility of keeping their vision alive? We'll dive into those questions after this break. Stay with us.
This episode of Movers and Thinkers is sponsored by Nashville Software School, where Taylor Perkins was able to create and implement a career plan. Perkins plays guitar in a rock band. He wanted a programming job that he could do on the road between gigs.
Because as a software developer, you don't always have to work 9 to 5. You can work at a venue.
He did a 6-month boot camp and landed a job at an online polling company before graduation. At 21, he's already out of school and starting a career that pays well and offers freedom.
I can be my own boss, and I can create something on my own without needing to go to someone else for a job. I also feel like I am valuable in any situation.
Make yourself valuable at this part-time or full-time boot camp. Visit NashvilleSoftwareSchool.com to learn more. And by the Jennings A. Jones College of Business at Middle Tennessee State University, where mid-career professionals can keep their jobs while working on an MBA. Monica Holmes finished hers in 1 year, then landed a position as an IT project manager at a big healthcare company, where she oversees a website that helps cancer patients find the right clinical trials.
So here in this website, you can search by cancer type. You can search.
Holmes says studying finance and those softer skills like public speaking and clear business writing helped launch her career to the next level.
And I think it was one of the best investments I ever made.
You can get a business degree in as little as 12 months with the Flex MBA program from the Jones College of Business. Go to mtsu.edu/business.
You're listening to Movers and Thinkers. Welcome back. It's clear that Caroline, Amy, and Manuel all love what they do, and they love having this extra element of legacy in their work. But it's also clear that legacy can be complicated. So I ask our resident luthier, Manuel,
what would you tell someone who's contemplating either getting into business with family or just kind of doing a similar thing as something that, you know, their parents or siblings do?
Well, I always joke and say that I don't wish harm upon my enemies. I pray that they'll open a small business. Because if you really want to know what challenge is, try running a small business. And then on top of that, when you have a sense of responsibility because you're honoring that work that came before you, it adds to it. When you're the son or the daughter of somewhat of a celebrity in your industry or in your field, that you're kind of living in that shadow. And at some point, you want to step out and you want to be able to have some kind of recognition for yourself to be able to keep that moving forward.
I want to piggyback on that.
Here's Caroline, the writer.
There's a lot of big shoes to fill in the stories that various family members of mine have created in Nashville. I guess my advice would be to not be afraid to like live up to your inheritance. Do you know, I think that some people think, oh, I need to branch out on my own and do something else to establish my own name, right? Or you can earn the name you inherited and then take it farther, do you know, and evolve the direction of it. Because this sort of myth of the everyone needing to be self-made to be deserving is, you know, that's a disrespect to the people in my family who worked before to give me something to claim. We have all sorts of legacy families in this country that have inherited all kinds of things that matter so much less than the work that my parents did and are so happy to inherit it and do family businesses. And so thinking about ways to productively inherit something, I throw down the gauntlet and say, be good enough for the stuff they did before and then top it or respect it by growing it.
Next to her, Amy, the pastor, is nodding.
Yeah, and when I've been in conversations with people who are doing vocational discernment, trying to figure out where they're going and if there's a family-related, you know, connection there, my response has always been, don't do it because your family does it, and don't not do it because your family does it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that is important to me to watch for is this a competitive thing? Are you going into a competition with family members, either on your generation or family members that have gone before, especially the ones whose shadows loom so large? You know, if you're spending your life trying to create the career that's going to hold up to your grandfather, you know, that's just not going to be happy.
One of the reasons why I was so interested in this topic is because in my family, there are no other journalists. Like, my parents don't have any expectations for me in terms of what I'm doing. They're super impressed by anything that I do that's like remotely positive, even if to me it's not a big deal at all. I'm wondering for you, Caroline, what does it take to impress your mom?
Your mom's wildly accomplished. She's like, I'm going to write a number one country song and then does it. And then I'm going to write a novel and then it's on the New York Times bestseller list. So it gives me a lot of drive to hustle because it's a tall order. But, you know, I did choose a career that is not directly, my mother has published in like a million creative writing fields, but she's not a poet. So I was a poetry major, you know, and I published a book of poems. I feel like the way she experiences my poems is one of our most grown-up parts of our relationship, because I'm making art in a genre that she doesn't, and she's able to appreciate that, like grown woman to grown woman, in a way that's different from the sort of apprentice mentor thing that happens when I write prose.
In other words, the fact that Caroline has diverged a little from the family path has made it easier on her. And it also has for Amy, more than a little, really. Her church looks very different from her father's, in part because a woman would have never been in charge.
I had such a great advantage of being female instead of male. My oldest brother, who was a pastor for a while, I think really did just work hard and do extremely well, but felt in the shadow of expectation. I think they were self-imposed. But, you know, everything I did was different. Even doing the same tasks, the fact that it was me doing them made it look different and be received differently. So I didn't feel that pressure, and I'm really grateful for it.
Of course, there is also a potential downside to this. Her father could have simply not supported her. Amy's church takes positions on things like LGBT rights that her dad's Southern Baptist churches would have never done.
That could have gone off the rails real quick. But because of the kind of person that my father is, it never did. And for 5 years, he and my mother lived in Nashville and attended my church. There was a very shoe on the other foot kind of an experience with that. But because of his largesse of spirit, right? Because he's just generous with who he is. There's never that thing of, you know, that wouldn't fly where I came from. Well, yeah, duh. We all know that wouldn't fly where you came from.
Yeah.
I know, like for me, it was challenging because I'm third generation. Mm-hmm. And statistically, they say the first generation starts it, the second one builds it, and the third one ruins it. And I don't feel a sense of, you know, oh, I have to do this, or this is like this heavy burden on my back or anything like that. But I'm very much aware that I can continue to take this into the next, century, the next decade, whatever it might be, pass it down to my girls if they choose to follow it. Or I could just mismanage it, not be aware of the history, what came before me, what got me there. So I have a line drawn. And if you know where, you know, if you start with the end in mind, you know what you're willing to compromise, what you're willing not to.
So, what is your line?
Well, my line is that I'm not going to have my instruments mass produced and put my family's name on them. I'm what's called an old world luthier, not because I'm that old, but because the methods that I use to build are methods that are a dying, you know, it's not used anymore because it doesn't make sense to do it that way. You can make a lot more profit if you're using that McDonald's business model and if you're pumping a lot more product out. So that's my line. I'm not going to sacrifice my family's name.
Do you think you would be doing what you're doing if your family hadn't done it?
I don't know. I think you're a product of what you're exposed to. I love what I do, but I don't know if I'd be doing it if I didn't have that great example growing up and getting to grow up in a shop that was, you know, full of luthiers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think there's any chance I'd be a pastor if I hadn't grown up in it. I spend a lot of time mentoring and teaching students who are studying for pastoral ministry, and I just always start with, poor thing, oh my gosh, you have no idea what you're getting into, and, you know, let me just show you, tell you, be as free of boundaries as I possibly can, because I can't conceive of how you could start this without some understanding of what it involves.
But Caroline says she thinks the creative instinct is part of her, regardless of the circumstances she grew up in.
I think I'd probably be doing it and not as well. I'm not afraid to send my work out or to find ways to get it published. And I'm always like, just send it. You'll get it. You're a great writer. And they're like, well, how do you believe that I could have that do this as a living? And I go, oh, right. I have this wonderful context for it. But I think I still would have come to it. I don't know that I would have been as sure that it would work.
Looking forward to the next generation, which you may or may not have thought about, do you hope that they will follow in your footsteps?
Well, for me, I want my girls to have the same options I did. My parents always encouraged us in whatever we wanted to do. So when I thought I was going to be a police officer, I had their support in that, even though my mom hated the idea. So my girls, if they want to do that, that's great. I definitely want music to be a part of their life. I want them to know how to create things and be able to imagine what it is, and whether it's, you know, putting it in words or in paintings or, you know, whatever it might be. That's super important. Mm-hmm.
So my kids are 18, 19, and 20. At the end of her freshman year in college, my oldest daughter called and said, so, Mom, how do you get to seminary? What do you do if you're going to go to seminary? And I said, honey, I'm going to lie down for a little bit and call you back. So, you know, they may be, I don't know, longshoremen and circus performers, but they're kind and respectful and good-hearted young people, and I don't care what they do.
Well, Manuel, Amy, Caroline, thank you so much. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah,
nice to meet you.
That was Amy Mears, Manuel Delgado, and Caroline Randall Williams. Movers and Thinkers is engineered by Carl Peterson and Cameron Adkins, edited by Mac Linebaugh, Anita Bug, and Blake Farmer, and made possible by you, our listeners. You are the backbone of Nashville Public Radio, which runs on listener donations. So if you love this show, please give to the station so we can keep doing more. Go to WPLN.org/give. To stay up to date on Movers and Thinkers live tapings and new episodes, join our mailing list at WPLN.org/movers. Music for this episode is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Emily Siner, and this is Nashville Public Radio.